Welcome to the Small Caps Podcast, where we discuss news and information related to ASX-listed companies and financial markets, keeping investors informed. Note that the content in this podcast is not financial or investment advice, and be sure to head over to smallcaps.com.au to get the latest market news. Now, without further delay, here's today's podcaster.
Welcome back to Small Caps. My name's Kerry Stevenson. I'm delighted today. We are going to go all the way across to Vancouver, Canada. I have the Managing Director and CEO of Montem Resources, Mr. Peter Doyle. Welcome. Don't we love technology, which means you're over there in Vancouver. I'm here in Sydney, and we can chat about Montem Resources, who have just listed literally this week on the ASX at 25 cents a share. Got some very exciting coal projects up there in Canada. And Peter, you've had over 25 years experience in this sector. I want to talk to you about Montem Resources. But before we drill into Montem, I know you've got a lot of experience in the coal industry. Can I ask you about what is the geopolitical, opportunity up there in Canada? Are they very much pro-coal? And also, I think what you're looking at is coking coal. Is that right? Coking coal rather than thermal coal. So what I want to find out from you is, what is the investment thesis for coal at the moment? Because, of course, we do have challenges like climate change, and we do have challenges from people out there. So what are some of the risks? What are the opportunities? And then we're going to dive down into Montem Resources. So welcome to the program.
Oh, thanks very much, Kerry. I'm pleased to be here. And very exciting week for us, as we've listed on the ASX. Look, Canadians make a lot of export dollars from exporting some of the greatest coking coal on the seaborne market, just like Australia does. And the geopolitical climate, if you like, for coking coal is very different to thermal coal. It's an essential ingredient in 70% of the world's steel production. You can't make steel on the scale that the current global industry requires without coking coal. There are the three largest exporters of coking coal in the world are Australia, the USA, and Canada. Canada is the third largest, and our operations and what we'll talk about later are in the heartbeat of coking coal production in Canada. So we're on the right street, and we think we've got the right address and a great house on that street. In terms of the utilisation for coking coal, you coke it, you turn it into another product that is metallurgical coke, which goes into a blast furnace and then is consumed in the process of turning iron ore into pig iron, which is then later turned into steel. And that is 70% of the production of new steel that's made around the world, and it requires, for every tonne of steel that's produced, around about 750 kilograms of coking coal is consumed, and that puts the global market at just over a billion tonnes of coking coal per annum.
Okay, so the demand is there, and you feel that what you've got, and we're going to talk about that in a minute, so that the demand for coking coal is strong. Has it increased in the last couple of years, so that you are filling a gap with Montem Resources and your projects?
Sure. So steel demand is growing, steel production is growing, and coking coal production and demand for coking coal is growing. There's a real concentration of supply in Australia, and production outside of Australia is well supported by the consumers, being predominantly Japanese, Korean, Chinese, Taiwanese, and Indian steel mills. That's the main market for seaborne exporters like ourselves. We expect to be well supported as we come into the market. There's a bit of an interesting paradigm at the moment between Australia and China. China's the biggest user of coking coal in the world by a very long way. And Canada's well positioned as an alternate supplier to China, which is obviously good for us. With respect to the concentration of supply, not just geographically, but also within individual companies. BHP is the largest supplier of coking coal in the world. Teck Resources, whose operations are 10 kilometres from ours, right next door, is the second largest producer of seaborne coking coal in the world. So you've got this concentration of supply. It's a very powerful concentration of supply. And new entrants like ourselves are generally encouraged by consumers, by the users of coking coal to get into the market. And we expect to leverage that and be able to form a joint venture at our first mine, the Tent Mountain Mine, with a consumer or an aligned partner to a consumer, like a marketing company such as Marubeni, Itochu, Sumitomo, these famous Japanese trading companies that that help supply the steel mills of Japan and around Asia. So it's a growing market as the world economy recovers from COVID. We expect it to be infrastructure-led, big government spend on infrastructure. That infrastructure, its backbone is steel. Steel plants in India are at full capacity, in China at full capacity. There's rapidly growing car production out of Toyota are breaking all records at the moment. Things are really tightening up in the coal market at the moment. Demand is strong. Prices have suddenly risen. They've gone up over 10% in the last week.
Oh, wow.
In fact, Queensland appears to be fully sold for quarter four, and the forward curve is very, very strong in the first quarter of next year. It's approximately 20% above current pricing. So, yeah, things are looking good. We've timed our run into the market well.
I was just about to say you've timed your market. Your timing's very good. Can we just go back to the joint venture that you mentioned? Why is it important to have that joint venture in place, and what does that look like, I guess, from a company point of view and its impact potentially on shareholders?
Sure. So it's important really for two reasons, Kerry. One is to secure either a customer or a customer base, being a marketing company that become your agents and sell into the primary consumers, being the steel mills. And so, you know, you're really securing your market by having a joint venture partner who has either natural offtake itself, being a steel mill, or has very good strong links into those steel mills. You're providing yourself a channel into the market for a proportion of your coal. And joint ventures are usually set up as a minority shareholding at the project itself rather than at the corporate level. And that way, you know, you're providing for yourself an opportunity to ease the burden of market entry and consistency of offtake. So it's the first one is you're getting offtake. The second one is you're reducing the need for equity from your existing shareholders. You are giving up some of the asset base, but you're getting paid for that. And that payment then goes into reducing dilution for your existing shareholders. So it's a well-worn strategy, well-worn path for producing coal mines. Most of the coal mines in Queensland, and indeed some of our nearby neighbours in the Crows Nest Pass and the Elk Valley, have joint ventures or have been set up by joint ventures with either consumers, being steel mills, or their marketing groups, their aligned marketing groups. So it's a strategy that's been employed by many, many companies before us. We believe that it is the right strategy to build the Tent Mountain Mine or to restart the Tent Mountain Mine. It reduces the burden of all the equity capital coming from existing or new shareholders. So it reduces dilution.
Love that. Love to hear that. So let's talk about Tent Mountain Mine, because you've got a number of projects, but Tent Mountain Mine, I mean, that's, first of all, that has been in production before, but that ceased production in 1983. So we're talking quite some time, and you guys picked it up in 2017, I believe. Is that right?
And 2016. Toward the end of 2016, Montem was created. We bought these assets, including the Tent Mountain Mine, and possibly you're alluding to the gap in time and why has Tent Mountain been sitting there for so long? Well,
yeah,
partly because of a convoluted ownership over that time. In 1983, It finished a 15-year contract with the company that owned it. It finished a 15-year contract with the Japanese. 100% of the coal had gone to the Japanese steel mills. That contract ran out. The Japanese invested in Queensland. The Queensland industry grew. And the Canadian industry really somewhat became flat at that point. Prices were low, and really these assets began to just be forgotten about by their owners. The ownership then changed five different times, and most of the time these assets were owned by companies that were very, very focused on thermal coal production in the US, and really they were forgotten about. And it wasn't until our founding shareholders, Rob Tindall, and his associates found these assets. They were up for sale by a large thermal coal producer in the US, and they bought them and recognised the potential that this coking coal, this hard coking coal, is now getting rarer and rarer and harder to find, that the advanced stage of permitting that Tent Mountain had, that it was an existing mine with existing permits, gave it gave us a big advantage in getting going or getting these assets restarted as fast as possible.
And let's talk about the fact that you are, because I believe you're talking about going into production, which gives you cash flow in 2022. Now, I know you've been working on it for about three and a half years, but is that quite a short time frame? I mean, talk to us through that. And also, have you got any hurdles to cross before you get into that production? I think it's Q1 2022.
Yeah, well, it's a short time frame between now and Q1 or half one 2022. But no, we've been toiling away very hard. We our existing investors have invested a lot of time and money into our projects to get us through a definitive feasibility study to do 2 years of environmental baseline monitoring on an existing mine site, and to prepare the applications to government to get restarted. Those applications, the final lot of applications, are due to go in hopefully in October, but definitely in the next 8 to 10 weeks. I've just got off a meeting with my team on that. Actually, things are looking very, very good. Importantly, earlier this year, we had a series of meetings last year and this year with the federal government. For any new coal mine in Canada, you have to get both a federal approval and a provincial approval. The federal government have given us a written notification that they don't require a new approval from the federal government for our mine, as we're an existing mine. And the scale of the mine is 1.1 million tonnes of saleable coal per annum, that they don't require a re-review. So our permitting only sits with the provincial regulator. The Albertan government are very, very eager to get the Crows Nest Pass coal fields operating again. There's no operating coal mine right there right now. They're all in British Columbia, which is right next door to our mine. In fact, our mine straddles the border, but because we don't have to go through the process again with the federal review, we only have a provincial review. Our expectation is a 12-month review from the regulator in Alberta, that we will receive a positive ruling from restarting the plant. It ultimately, it is a ruling, because they're a regulator, and they will give us the green light to restart operations in Q3, Q4 next year. We'll have a very short time frame to build the mine, and we'll be selling coal in the first half of 2022.
Are you building the mine, or are you just getting it restarted? Is there a lot of cost that has to go into restarting what was a former mine?
There's a lot of existing infrastructure that we leverage, such as power supply and roads and that sort of thing. But we do have to build a new coal preparation plant and a rail siding. Those are the primary, the primary big capital items that we have. We also have our mining fleet, but most likely we'll employ a contract mining service to reduce that capital and to get things started faster. But yeah, we have secured the land for the rail siding. We've been working very hard with our coal preparation experts and infrastructure experts, Sedgmans, who are very well known globally in the coal industry, have designed a plan for Tent Mountain that we believe will do the job very, very well. And as soon as we get the green light from government, we'll start building that.
Okay, so we've talked a little bit on that sort of the mine site. I just wanted to ask you, I mean, Canada is well known for its Indigenous groups. How have you gone about incorporating, working within the Indigenous community? Any challenges there, or do they see this as giving income and opportunities for the Indigenous community?
Well, I think the challenge there is to impress upon the Indigenous groups that are involved in our area and our projects the sincerity of modern resources and who we are and what we represent, which is very definitely an opportunity to come and partner with us and to work with us to bring jobs and infrastructure to the First Nations of this region, and to provide the opportunity to increase the benefit more broadly amongst both our local community and the First Nations that are there. So Alberta's quite an interesting place. The region is known as the Treaty 7 areas. So a treaty was signed, and the First Nations of that region, where all we are in engagement right now with them, or hopefully they consider full engagement. They understand what it is that we're trying to do. And through the next 12 months, we expect to negotiate and come to agreements which are known as IBAs, or Impact Benefit Agreements, with each of these groups, both in Alberta and BC.
So working with them at the moment, you don't see any great challenges there. It's just a matter of communication and working together with them to show them the benefits.
Yeah, absolutely. And to understand their point of view on how we're potentially impacting them and making sure we take account of that in our planning.
Now, Peter, Tent Mountain, it's an open cut operation, I believe. Any environmental issues that you've got up there in Canada? What are they like to work with this open cut coal mining operations? Is that pretty straightforward?
Oh, look, you know, digging holes in the ground is something that humans have been doing for a very, very long time, and extracting the mineral resources. And we've got very, very good at it, and things have become much more sophisticated. Coal mining in the Rocky Mountains is not new. The Teck Resources, who are next door to us, produce around about 25 million tonnes from their open cut operations annually. And our coal mine, Tent Mountain Mine, used to produce around about 1 to 1.5 million tonnes per annum, and that is exactly the same size that we are going to be applying for. Right now, it's an abandoned mine site that has been left in a state that is not fully reclaimed. The reclamation that was done in the 1980s compared to what we're proposing to do is quite different. And in fact, one of the things that's very, very different to operating mines in Australia is the management of snowmelt and water and the effects of the downstream flows of that. There's been widely reported in Canada and around an issue known as selenium or selenium leachates. Our selenium management plan has been worked on by lots of very well regarded experts in the field, and we've come up with what we believe is a best in class selenium management plan that will actually reduce the existing selenium leachate load that is going into the watershed to well below the recommended both federal and provincial levels. So yeah, we're very, very pleased with the management plan that we came up with. Very excited about presenting to people and showing people just what modern coal mining can be, how it can be done and how it can be managed.
Yeah, and I think that's a good point to make to everyone that's listening. Modern coal mining is very different from what it was back in the 1980s. Now, Peter, I want to make sure that we do also cover a couple more things. I want to talk about your other assets, because Tent Mountain is your primary asset at the moment. That's the focus. But you do have some other opportunities out there. Let's cover those quickly. And then before we finish up, I want to talk to you about why investors need to take a good look at Montem Resources. So first up, let's talk about the other assets that you have and that you're looking at the moment.
Yeah, thanks, Kerry. We'll go through it quickly. So really, we've got three classes of asset: an existing mine that we're restarting, and the business plan is quite simple. We take the cash flow from that mine and invest it in our large pipeline of development assets. Tent Mountain should produce on average around about $65 million per annum EBITDA. That gives you good, strong cash flows to create a mining business that's much larger than a million tonnes. Our second project that we're looking at is known as the Chinook Project. It actually covers three old mines, of which they used to produce the coal and send it to Japan again. It's an enormous area. It stretches over 40 kilometres of strike length of coal and has the potential for multiple large open cut mines. We're in the middle of doing a concept study on these mines at the moment, and believe that we'll be bringing that information to the market and to investors before the end of the year, which outlines basically what we think is there and how we think we can bring it to market over the next 5 to 8 years. The size of this mine or this potential operation is similar in scale to next door at Teck operations in the Elk Valley, and similar in scale to the size of the mines in Queensland. Beyond Chinook, we've got also a large exploration area just north of where Attram Coal is operating their Isolation South project. And our project is called Isola. It's just been estimated by our third-party geologists that there could be somewhere between 275 million tonnes and 900 million tonnes of coal there. So it's an enormous, potentially enormous deposit. And we'll get out and explore that. In fact, our geologists went out there over the last few weeks and did field mapping, and we will apply to go exploring Isola next year. So Tent Mountain first, Chinook second, Isola third. We have an asset base that has the potential to build an actual large mining company just on what we own right now.
Some very interesting projects there. Why should investors be, like, I know you've just listed this week, so it's literally, ladies and gentlemen, this is hot off the press. And I know that you were really delighted with the take up for the listing and the amount of interest that was shown in the listing. What can investors, why should they get excited right now? I mean, I know we've talked about the project.
Well, I'll jump in and tell you, Kerry, because of the value.
Let's talk value.
Let me just show you a screen. I hope you can see that. Let me know that you can.
Can you see that? Yep, I can. Yep.
All right. So I just want you to focus, and for those that are watching this, to focus on this map. And let me just tell you very quickly about what it is. So our assets here are in yellow and purple. This is the Tent Mountain mine, and this is the Chinook project, and these are our exploration areas. Just to put it into context, this area down the left-hand side are the mining operations by Teck that produce 25 million tonnes. The Chinook project here has the potential to be the same similar scale as those. And just to the right of us, or just to the east of that, is the Grassy Mountain operation or the Grassy Mountain project, which is being pushed forward by Riversdale. Hancock Prospecting bought Riversdale for $744 million in 2019. They don't have approval yet to build that mine and operate that mine, but they expect to get that approval very, very soon. And to the north of them is Attram, and Attram Coal have been drilling these leases for the last 2 or 3 years and are finding one large deposit here at Isolation South and another one here at Elan South, I think it is. And, you know, Attram's market capitalisation is around about $150, $160 million. Montem Resources at a market cap of around about $50 to $60 million is surely any investor can see that potential value gap between what we present right now and what is the potential of the size of our corporate in the future.
That's and you know what, Peter, thank you for sharing that with us, because I really like the map and actually seeing what you have, where it's located. It's very close to Teck Resources, which is enormous. And as you rightly put it out to our listeners out there, one of the things right now, your market cap is 50 to 60, Attram's about 150, and Teck, woof, off the Richter scale. Okay, so Peter, it's been fascinating talking to you. Any last comments that you'd like to make before we finish up?
Well, thank you very much for your time and for being interested. I'm very, very pleased with the way that the company's coming together over the last 3 years. The market's with us, and we really believe in our business plan to get a mine started in the next 2 years and reinvest that cash flow to become a major coking coal producer.
And you've also got a chairman who's also an Aussie, Mark Lochtenberg, I believe.
Yeah, Mark's mined a lot of coal in his time, and he's a very charismatic and very, very impressive man in his ability to read markets and really understand both what investors need and the customer. And he's a great mentor to have on board.
Peter Doyle, Montem Resources, it's been a fascinating look at where you're going, where you've come from, and what's up next. Thanks for joining us on Small Caps today.
Thanks, Kerry.